The Pool of the Earth, from the Book of Knowledge, edited by Arthur Mee and Holland Thompson, Ph.D. There is a term connected with gravity which we must understand, and which we shall find will throw light on what we have already learnt about equilibrium. This is the term center of gravity. In the case of any object, there must be, as we can imagine, a point around which the whole of it could be balanced. The amount of matter in the body would be so disposed all around that point that if it were hung by a thread at that point, it would stay at that position. It would balance perfectly around that point. It is as if all the matter of the body were really massed together at that point, which we call its center of gravity. Probably a better term would be center of mass. If we have a round ball made throughout of the same material, the center of the ball will be its center of gravity. Now suppose we take a square board with the intention of finding its center of gravity, assuming, of course, that the board is made of the same material and is of the same thickness throughout. We want to fix a single thread to the board at one point so that the thread will support the board evenly. That point will, of course, be the center of gravity. Now we all know what a diagonal is, the line joining opposite corners of such a board. If we draw the two diagonals, the point where they cross each other is the center of gravity. That is all very well, but it is not quite so easy to find the center of gravity of a body that has an irregular shape. Suppose, for instance, that instead of a square board or a round one, we had one of a quite irregular shape and wished to find the point at which we could support it so that it would lie evenly. Let us pick up the board, tie a string somewhere to its edge, and let it hang steady. If we draw a line straight down the board, continuing the line of the string, the center of gravity will be somewhere in that line. Now, it is a very interesting fact that we should be able to say this for certain, and we must try to understand why we can do so. When the board hangs steady from the string, there must be, as in any other case of equilibrium, a balance of forces. These forces, of course, are the Earth's gravity pulling downwards and the tension of the string pulling upwards. Now, as these two forces act equally and oppositely, the center of gravity must be somewhere in the line of them, just as if the whole substance of the board were at that point. If the center of gravity were to one side of the line of the string, then we should have what is called a couple of forces. Gravity and the pull of the string would be acting not in the same straight line, but oppositely in parallel lines, and this couple would mean that the board was twisted until the center of gravity did come to lie under the string. The only real way to understand this, which is perfectly simple, is to draw a diagram for ourselves as we read it. First, we can draw a diagram showing what really happens. Then we can draw a diagram showing the board with the center of gravity to one side of the line downwards from the string, and then we can see how the couple of forces is bound to rotate the board or turn it round. How we may find the center of gravity of a board or a plate. Now, we laid down no condition as to the point that the board was to be hung from. No matter from where it is hung, what we say is true. Suppose, then, that we hang it up again from some second point, and then draw the line downwards from the string. The center of gravity will be somewhere in that line, as we said before. But we know that it is also somewhere in the first line we drew. Now, there is only one point which is common to both lines, and that is the point where they cross each other. The center of gravity of the board is there. If we have made our experiment precisely, and if we can attach a wire or a thread to the board exactly at that point, we shall find that the board will hang evenly around it on all sides. Of course, we can try the same experiment with a plate, or a slate, or any other similar flat object. If we take such a complicated thing as the human body, we certainly cannot easily find its center of gravity. The body is very irregular in shape, and it is made of different parts of very various densities. Nevertheless, it has been possible by long study to find one deeply interesting fact. It is one of the most important facts of the whole body, because upon it depends the erect attitude, which means the freedom of the hands from purposes of walking, and the chance to make use of them for all the great human purposes. The great joint that divides our body into two halves. If we look sideways at anyone walking, or if we look sideways at a skeleton, we can see that the hip joints make the great joint which really divides the body into an upper half and a lower half. As we know very well, the trunk and head and arms can swing backwards and forwards upon the lower limbs at the hip joint. Now suppose a line were drawn straight down to the earth from the center of the hip joints of anyone who is standing. We have here a problem, as we can readily see, which is very like the problem of the board hung by a string. In this case, the support is below instead of above, but that does not really matter. Now, if we understand the principle of the center of gravity, we can see for certain what must happen to the upper part of the body as it is supported through the straight line down to the earth from the hip to the heel. If the center of gravity of the trunk and head lies so that the line dropped from it to the earth will lie in front of the line from the hip joint to the earth, then the body must topple forwards. The center of gravity of the upper part of the body is found in front of the line through the hip joints in the case of all animals, like the horse and cat and so on, and that, of course, is why they have to walk as they do. Only by muscular effort and a certain degree of skill can a horse or a dog walk on its hind legs. Why it is difficult for babies and animals to stand upright. Even of the man-like apes, including the wonderfully erect gibbons, which we may see any day at a zoo, it is true that the center of gravity lies in front of the hip joints. They can walk very well for a time, but it costs them labor, and they can scarcely stand. A very small baby is in exactly the same plight as these animals. But, as the baby grows, the curve of its backbone changes in such a way that the center of gravity of the trunk now lies, as it does in all of us, behind the hip joints. The two lines dropped to the earth, one from the hip joints and the other from the center of gravity, are parallel, and the forces acting through them make a couple, so that the trunk and head tend to rotate and roll backwards to the ground at the hip joints, leaving the legs erect. That, however, is a thing which we never saw accomplished, even by the most skillful acrobat. It is prevented by the special development in our bodies of two huge bands of fibers, one in front of each hip joint, which prevent the trunk from rolling backwards under the influence of gravity. This beautiful arrangement means that, instead of standing upright only by muscular effort and careful balancing, we can do so in virtue of self-acting mechanical principles. Someone may say that all this is not the story of the earth, but the body is the child of earth, and the laws of the earth act in it and upon it, and the body is successful insofar as it obeys and is adapted to the laws of the earth. When a thing is steady, and when it is unsteady. We have already studied the various kinds of equilibrium, and we learnt their names, stable, unstable, and neutral. But of course, we ought to be able to define the exact causes which make the difference between the equilibrium that is stable, or steady, and those that are neutral and unstable. Our study of the center of gravity can explain this. The simple law is that anything is in a state of stable equilibrium when the center of gravity is raised by any disturbance, but it is in a state of unstable equilibrium if anything that disturbs it lowers the center of gravity. All this is quite plain if we think of the center of gravity as the place where all the stuff of the body may be supposed to be collected. Now, if anything is going to raise that point, as for instance when we push against something hung from a string, then, when the force which raised it ceases to act, gravity, which is always acting, pulls the body back to where it was before. This is true of any case of stable equilibrium, such as that of the slightly tilted tumbler. But, of course, if the displacing force pulls down the center of gravity, then, when it ceases to act, we cannot expect the body to return to its original position. There is nothing to make it do so. On the contrary, there is gravity to prevent it doing so. How an egg may illustrate the three kinds of equilibrium. We can illustrate these cases, and also the case of neutral equilibrium, by an egg. For a second, we may balance an egg on its point, but the tiniest disturbance will be fatal, because it means lowering the center of gravity. This is a case of unstable equilibrium. On the other hand, we may have the egg resting on its side. Of course, we are assuming all the time that the yolk of the egg is unbroken and lies in the center of the egg. Now, we may roll the egg along the table by pushing it, just as we may roll a billiard ball. In a little while, friction and the resistance of the air will stop it, and it will come to rest. The force we applied neither raised nor lowered the center of gravity of the egg. Its equilibrium was neutral. But if, instead of rolling the egg by a push at one side, we try to tilt it at either end, we find that, after tossing up and down for a little, it will come back to its old position. So far as disturbances in that direction are concerned, it is in a state of stable equilibrium. The reason is that when we tilted it, we raised the center of gravity, and when the finger was removed, it returned to that position in which the center of gravity is as low as possible. That, of course, must be the stable position, the position in which the egg as a whole is as near the center of the Earth as possible, so that the whole force of gravitation is on the side of resisting and disturbance of its equilibrium. A common accident that happens when men forget the laws of balance. These questions of equilibrium and center of gravity are of the greatest practical importance whenever the balancing of anything matters. Take, for instance, one of the most common and fatal of accidents, which happens somewhere or other almost every day in the year. We are constantly hearing that a rowing boat has been upset and someone has been drowned. Except where the boat has been in a rough sea, it is safe to say that in every such case, someone has been very foolish. There is a simple rule of safety which we all ought to know and act upon, or we may be responsible for the loss of one or more lives. The rule is that not more than one person at a time should be standing up in a rowing boat, and the lower even he crouches when he moves about, the less danger there will be. We see that this is a problem in equilibrium, and the whole question of equilibrium depends upon the center of gravity. If the center of gravity of the boat were in its keel, as in the case of those little toy bottles with half a bullet at their base, then the boat could not be so easily upset. It could be tilted or turned upside down, but at any rate it would right itself at once. This is a case, of course, of stable equilibrium, where any disturbance means the raising of the center of gravity. When we build what is called a lifeboat, we provide it, among other things, with a very heavy iron keel, which means that the center of gravity is kept so low that, with the help of other arrangements, the boat, even when it is upset, has the power to right itself. But in an ordinary rowing boat there is no heavy iron keel, and the greatest factors in determining where its center of gravity lies are the bodies of the occupants. Why a rowing boat capsizes when people stand up in it. Directly we stand up, the center of gravity of the boat is raised, and any disturbance is more likely to lower it, which means that the boat goes over. If two persons stand up together, especially if there is no one else in the boat, then the risk is very grave indeed. The accidents that cause the loss of so many precious young lives every year are usually due to two persons standing up in a small rowing boat, in defiance of the laws of equilibrium and center of gravity. It required a great deal of experiment and labor to discover how to make a boat which should have its center of gravity so placed that practically nothing could upset it. The great English lifeboat institution has such a boat, and probably the most essential thing about it is the lowness of its center of gravity. There are other qualities, such as the power of righting itself when upset. This makes the modern lifeboat perhaps the most wonderful vessel that man has yet put upon the water, small though it be. All these questions apply, of course, to great ships as well as to small ones, and it is a matter of the utmost importance that the weight of a ship shall be rightly distributed. It would be very easy to build a ship so that, when a wave made it roll, its tendency would be to roll over still further and overturn. How the ballast of a ship prevents it from turning upside down. Many of us have been in a ship at some time or other, and we know that when it rolls to one side because of a wave, it rolls back again. It may never have occurred to us why it does this. Now that we have learnt Newton's first law of motion, we shall naturally ask this question. The wave started the ship moving in a certain direction. According to Newton's first law, the ship must go on moving in that direction until something stops it. When we look into the matter, we find that the weight of the water which the ship has displaced acts upon the ship and tends to right it. But for this to happen, and no vessel could live in anything but the smoothest sea if it did not happen, the center of gravity of the ship must be low down. We see to this by having the ship's hold filled with ballast, something dense and heavy, the result of which is to lower the center of gravity of the whole ship. If for any reason the ballast were taken and thrown out of the ship, the result would be the same as that of standing up in a rowing boat. It means that the center of gravity of the ship is raised, and this means that the equilibrium is less stable and that it is much more liable to be overturned than it was before. The lifeboat and the submarine that are based on the laws of equilibrium. Long experience has enabled men who build ships to understand and master these principles in practice, so that, as we have seen, such a vessel as the modern lifeboat is scarcely capable of being improved upon. In recent years, however, Men have been trying to make new things, the success of which depends upon the laws of equilibrium. Submarine boats are an instance of this, and most of the difficulties have been mastered in this case. But it is the making of vessels to fly in the air that furnishes us with the greatest difficulties. The case of an ordinary balloon is quite simple, provided that the air be still. The ballast and the bodies of the passengers ensure that the center of gravity shall be very low down. But even in such a case as this, a violent wave of wind may upset the balance. The problem becomes much more serious and difficult when we take the case of a flying machine, and it is a great mistake to suppose that anyone has yet accomplished the feat of making a flying machine whose equilibrium can be relied upon no matter what the wind is doing. This will be quite plain if we go back to our principles. They are very simple, but they apply everywhere. We know that all motion depends upon forces. We know that all rest and all states of balance depend upon the relations between forces, and we know that there is a constant force of gravitation always acting and always acting equally. So long as we have only gravitation to reckon with, our problem is simple. Anyone can make a boat that will float on still water, or a balloon that will stay right, way up, in still air, or even a toy flying bird that will do the same. The difficulty arises when we have to reckon with other forces which vary to any degree in their direction and in their strength. That is the problem for the machine that is to fly in the air, no matter what the air is doing. The case is made specially difficult by the fact that, if the machine is to carry passengers, it must retain its right position always. It cannot be allowed to turn turtle and then right itself. Perhaps no one can yet say whether this problem can really be solved. A similar problem, but one that is not quite the same, has been perfectly solved by birds and by many insects. The bird is subject to all the laws which we have discussed. Gravitation is constantly acting upon it. The pressure of the air downwards and of the air in motion, which we call wind, acts upon it also. The bird has solved the problem of making power in itself that will keep it up, even though the specific gravity of its body is greater than that of the air. Now that problem has been perfectly solved by man in modern flying machines. This is not to say that man has made or ever will make engines that have as much power in proportion to their weight as a bird's muscles have, but the difference is only one of degree. There yet remains the thing which the bird can do and which we cannot do, and that is to fly and remain in almost any state of the air. Long and careful study has been made by many observers of the manner in which the bird balances itself. Photography has been called in for this purpose, and something has been learnt by the kind of photography that is used for making living pictures. As far as we can learn at present, it seems that the success of the bird is a success which only life itself can achieve, at any rate in such a degree. However this may be, it is worth noting that the bird, like a lifeboat, can, in a sense, turn turtle and then right itself again. The bird recovers, and so does the lifeboat. But the case of the lifeboat, and still more of the flying machine, is very different from that of the bird, because these contain passengers, and they must be thrown out. It is as if we asked a bird to fly with a penny balanced on its back, and the conditions were not merely that the bird should fly no matter what the wind was, but also that it should not permit the penny to slip off. No bird could accomplish such a feat, but that is the feat which we ask the flying machine to accomplish. We are still very far from enabling the machine to do what the bird can do, but it is certainly worth our while to remember that we are also asking it to accomplish not merely what the bird does, but what even the bird cannot perform. We must not leave the subject of gravitation without referring to what is, perhaps, the most important of all the questions it raises, much more important than even the question of flying machines or the floating of boats. If it be true that here is a force which acts forever, tending to pull every particle of matter in the universe towards every other particle, why does not all the matter in the universe get collected into one great solid ball? The old idea that everything must have a beginning and an ending. Now, there are two possible answers to the question, and it is necessary for both of them to be carefully considered and explained. The first answer is now disputed by some of the thinkers, but we ought to know that it was once believed in. It might be that this process of gathering together all the matter in the universe under the influence of gravitation was indeed going on, and had been going on since the universe was first made, but that there had not yet been time enough for it to result in gathering everything together into a solid ball, though there might be no doubt that such an event must eventually happen. This has in it the ideas of beginning and ending, which people have always been inclined to believe, and which, at first, most of us will think must be true. Not very many years ago, these ideas of beginning and ending were supposed to be strongly supported not only by the existence of the law of universal gravitation, but also by the behavior of heat and power in the universe. Men thought that the universe was like a machine which had been wound up and set running, but which in course of time must run down. One great thinker stood out against these notions and said they could not be true, and that was the famous English scientist Herbert Spencer. The theory that a famous English thinker taught about the universe. Spencer declared that, though we could not name or discover them yet, there must be other forces in the world which acted in the opposite direction to those we knew, such as the force of gravitation, and that is, the history of things in general must be a rhythm, like a wave going on and on forever, from everlasting to everlasting, as the Bible says of God. Now, many have come to believe that Herbert Spencer was right, and that the answer to the great question of what must be the consequence of gravitation is not what people supposed. Of course, we do not need telling that if what we have asserted about gravitation be true, and if there be no other force opposing it, it must at last have the consequence of gathering together all the matter in the universe. But we are now beginning to know something of the wonderful forces also always at work, which act in other directions. For instance, men have lately proved to absolute certainty the existence of a force which is exerted by light, by radiant heat, and by other forms of radiation, which are known as radiation pressure. Everyone has heard of gravitation, and very few people have heard of radiation pressure, but the one is just as important as the other. A force acts against the pull of gravitation and scatters things. This pressure acts in exactly the opposite direction to gravitation, and though, under the conditions we know best, gravitation is much the stronger and has its way, yet, under other conditions, which are just as common in the universe taken as a whole, radiation pressure is stronger than gravitation, and has its way, with the result that the matter which is acted upon, instead of being gathered together into a solid ball, is scattered. The discovery of radiation pressure is of great importance to science, but it is of far greater importance in another way, and that is why we must mention it here. Its highest importance is that it helps to give us new ideas of the universe itself. Without this discovery, the law of gravitation was a great argument in favor of the old view, which looked upon the universe as something which had been made and set running and must eventually run down. There is a great difference between this idea and the latter one, for which some now claim the support of science as well as of pure reason, that the universe has neither beginning nor ending, but is an eternal thing, the eternal revelation of the eternal God, who sustains it from everlasting to everlasting. The End. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.